As someone living with type 1 diabetes, have you ever experienced a low blood sugar or even a high blood sugar as a result of exercise? See, I used to be terrified of exercise and blood sugars and getting it all figured out, so much so that I didn't leave the house for a period of my life without extra preparations, low snacks galore, and perfect blood sugars. Now, because that's not often the reality of life, and life is chaotic and spontaneous, I had to figure it out. So today I want to walk you through how I overcame my own fear surrounding exercise and low blood sugars. I'm also walking you through a client story that I had that they recently walked me through their experience, their stepping stones, and walked through an interesting strategy. I want to share with you a bite-sized piece from that coaching call. And then I actually want to walk through how I navigate insulin on board in exercise, because that can be a real tricky one. So, got this one loaded up with some info for you, some golden nuggets, and of course, some stories. But first, we're going to jump into our theme song. And if you don't know who I am, my name is Matt Van de Vecht. I am a certified master fitness trainer and nutritionist. I also live with type 1 diabetes, and I'm thrilled to share today's topic with you because I know it's going to help a lot of people.
I've spent the last 10 years pushing the limits while identifying trends and patterns in my type 1 diabetes management. Follow along as I learn, apply, and share the fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle strategies that I've learned from diabetes experts around the world. The real question is, how can we live fearlessly with diabetes while maintaining stable blood sugars? This podcast is here to give you the answer. My name is Matt Van de Vecht, head coach and co-founder of FTF Warrior, and welcome to Part of My Pancreas.
All right, so let's start with my client's story. So on a recent coaching call, my client was reminiscing about how on one of my live trainings, she had actually biked an indoor bike and completed I think it was 11-mile ride and stayed perfectly in range. Blood sugars did not fluctuate. And I was like, that's incredible. Like I literally was impressed because even I have a difficult time doing that. That's a long bike ride, right? It's actually what I've been doing recently, similar distances, and it takes a lot of effort to keep in range. Now, with that, she brought it up not just to, you know, celebrate herself, even though she should, because that's awesome, but she was like, a recent night, I got like a mile in and blood sugars plummeted. I checked my insulin on board. I only had like 0.9 units on board, and yet it just tanked. What happened? I was like, ah, this is really interesting, right? And there's a couple different sides to this equation that I actually gave her as a response. And I want to give you guys a piece of that recording just from my own perspective, what I shared, because I think it'll be helpful. But understand that in my own life, I have seen blood sugars respond very differently. And I mentioned this in that clip as well. So I want to first share that clip with you, and then we'll dive a bit deeper into it. So here's that clip. So getting back on the bike real quick, I got three things. One, if you experience something that you perceive as trauma or you have a fear response to, it is important to dip your toes back in as soon as possible, because we start to form these brick walls in our head of like, that's not safe, I can't do that ever again. The longer it goes, the harder it is to break down that wall. I actually saw an example of this. We had a friend tell us they have two German shepherds and they got into a fight. Like they were out to kill each other. It was actually kind of scary. Thankfully, someone there was a dog trainer, and this is going to be a little bit graphic, but apparently if dogs get into a fight like that, you just stick your thumb up their butt and they release the grip, because the dog had the other dog's neck in its mouth, like it was gonna kill it. And so finger up the butt, like, ah, and then, you know, you pull them apart and all that. But 5 minutes later, they're like, okay, we have to reintroduce them now. And they're like, what? They're gonna kill each other. It's like, no, if you don't reintroduce them now, they will never get along ever again. And these dogs live together. And it's like,
oh gosh.
Oh, and he's like, this is how you do it in the kennel. Like this, you have to reintroduce them. Otherwise, the wall goes up. They are now enemies. You have to do this now. And with fear, same thing I've noticed as well, right? Where when we pull back out of fear, our brain goes, okay, it's safe if I pull back. I'm not going to do that again. And it's so much more difficult to push back in after you've given yourself that break. So I love that you brought that up. Yes, get back on the bike, even if it's like a half mile, just to reintroduce, right? Hey, it's okay. I'm going to make it. So I love that. Anyways, second thing was with the insulin on board and going for a little bike ride. For me, I've done the same thing with like 0.3, like nothing on board, and initial tank, poof, I'll drop 50 points in like 10 minutes. I'm like, what just happened? but I've noticed the same thing. And so I have to be extra aggressive in preparing for a ride if there is any residual insulin on board. Like, I really have to take it into consideration. The only time I don't is if I'm like 200, you know, like then it doesn't matter too much because I want to come down. But I've had a similar experience, and it's a bit spooky, right? If you see a drop that far. So yeah, proud of you for trying to hop back on and doing that today. That's great. So as you saw from that clip, my own experiences have shown consistently that any amount of insulin on board yields a much different response than if I have zero insulin on board. In other words, recent boluses that still have insulin in circulation, active insulin, some people refer to as. Now, for me personally, I have to be more aggressive in my approach if I'm going to go for a longer distance endurance-based bike ride or run or swim if there's any residual insulin on board. However, obviously in our programs, we teach our clients how to calculate that. There are ways to reverse engineer the experiences we have and develop these inputs, as we call them, for something called the 80-20 blood sugar formula. So we like to do math and analyze blood sugars and predict where they're going to go. It just makes the whole thing a lot easier. And that's what we teach in our programs. But I want you to understand that if I see insulin on board, I anticipate a different result. And it may even be a similar end result, but I might get there faster. In other words, if I expect that I'm going to drop to 80, okay, but it's going to take an hour in the absence of insulin on board over the course of an hour long ride, with insulin on board, I might reach that 80 level a lot faster. However, because of what we know on insulin and being paired with exercise, it's oftentimes going to go beyond just the 80 because then you have insulin and the burn rate taken into consideration. So blood sugars tend to drop faster, but also further in my experiences. So I wanted to share that with you. I know a lot of people don't take into consideration the insulin on board factor as we're looking at exercise. And this one has gotten me into a lot of trouble in the past where I would eat a meal, take my insulin, and then go play, you know, jump on the trampoline, go for a bike ride, go surfing, and my blood sugars would plummet. I'd crash. And a big part of that was the insulin on board. I don't want to get too deep into it because we're kind of bordering on medical advice if we're talking about insulin. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, right? I just love analyzing blood sugars and predicting them with formulas. Like, that's my thing, but I can't give you medical advice. So on to the next piece of that clip, talking about moving past fear. Now, obviously, I gave a semi-graphic example, but a very real example and perfect to tie into this. When we experience fear, the brain wants to shut things down and protect us, right? So oftentimes, if something was dangerous in any capacity, we have fear associated with that event, especially if it was traumatic and it had a bad ending or a rough ending, and we have this friction surrounding a repeat event, right? Where it's like, oh, I don't want to do that. I'm nervous. Now, you heard the example, you got the takeaways from that call, hopefully, but in my own life, there were a few instances where I had severe low blood sugars, some of them surrounding activity, some of them just on an average day. And one of them in particular landed me in the hospital in a foreign country by myself. I don't talk about that story a ton because I did a whole training on it and what I learned from it and how to avoid that and where the formula got its origin and all that fun stuff. But the idea behind it was I experienced what I perceived as a traumatic event. My blood sugars crashed. I ate everything in sight. Nothing helped. And it took hours for me to come out of that. Now, for the following weeks and months, I got real nervous surrounding low blood sugars. And I didn't know all that I know now. Obviously, I've learned a lot since then because that was before I started experimenting and researching with blood sugars, right? So in that phase, I shrunk. I got tiny and nervous and fearful and was like, I don't want to do anything to piss off my blood sugars because that was scary, right? I felt like I almost died. I'd like to not repeat that. And so as a result, I stopped going out for long bike rides. I stopped saying yes to family events. I stopped enjoying life. And it was through that process that eventually, after people had told me that I was a different person living in fear, right? They were like, what happened to this spontaneous and adventurous Matt that we once knew who, you know, would just take off into the mountains for hours? And I'm like, yeah, there's no chance I'm doing that ever again. I almost died. It's not going to happen. It took me a while, but eventually I realized that I had created this prison for myself out of fear. And I was fearful, of experiencing these scary impacts of what blood sugars could do surrounding exercise. However, I realized that in that prison I had created for myself, life was not really worth living in that capacity if I was going to do that for the rest of my life. Like, do I really want to live in a safety net my whole life? Eating the same foods, limited to no exercise, no social events, no fun, no creation of memories. That was depressing. And to me, it was enough of a catalyst to force me into action. So you know what? I don't want to live my life like this. I have to do something about this. But I'm also terrified in the same sense, right? And so for me, I decided baby steps was the best way for me to do it. The reintroduction we talked about, this exposure therapy essentially is what it was, where I was literally nervous to go too far from the house. It's crazy, right? Thinking about that now, like a lot of you know a lot about me and my adventuresome spirit and all the athletics that I do now and all this kind of stuff. I was nervous to leave the house. That's where I was. Like, that's how much of a grip fear had on my life. Nick, we can ignore the restriction of diet, the restriction of fun. I was nervous to leave the house. Now, it didn't get to a place where there were any official diagnoses, but I had actually found out there's this thing called agoraphobia, where you're afraid to leave the house. And I was like, holy cow, is that what I'm going to be labeled as? And I got nervous about my future so much so that I took baby steps to make sure that didn't become my future, right? So in this exposure therapy that I had created for myself, I said, you know what, we're going to break through, and essentially created this this atmosphere of one more, right? Like, if I went to the end of the driveway on Monday, I'm going to go to the end of the block on Tuesday. Went to the end of the block on Tuesday, I'm going to go around the whole block on Wednesday. And I just kept challenging myself, like, hey, that one worked out, let's push ourselves one more. And I forced myself to get reacquainted with exercise. And of course, I watched blood sugars carefully. I was very meticulous about keeping them in range so that I didn't risk going low. But for me, that was one of the big keys to overcoming my fear, was logically convincing myself, look, it was fine. You walked outside all the way to the end of the block and you came back and you didn't go low. And of course, there will be times when you go low, right? You probably can't stop that forever. But I would convince myself through that exposure, through logic, and say, hey, look, you just completed 1 mile. Great. Now we know a mile is safe. And I kind of built out this safety net mentally, where at least in my head, it made sense taking those baby steps, getting that exposure back. Kind of like we talked about the clip from the coaching call, right, with the dogs. Re-exposure is key. The more we keep ourselves locked in, the longer I would keep myself from experiencing life, from exercising, the more rigid I became, the more restricted my lifestyle became. And that wasn't something I was okay with, especially because I knew it would only continue to get worse. The longer you wait, the more cemented in our heads this gets. And it's very difficult to break habits that have been around for a year or a decade or 50 years. So I wanted to nip this in the bud as fast as possible. Now, over the course of the next 2 years, that moment of pushing myself one more, one more, one more, led me to eventually defeating a large portion of my fears. Now, I'd be lying to you if I said I am free of fear. There is zero fear in my entire life, because if you dumped me in the middle of some desert or a forest or a mountain range and said, okay, hike back, it's 200 miles, good luck, I'd be like, oh, shoot, what? Am I going to be okay? Right? Am I going to make it? Like, dangerous animals aside, I'm probably not going to have enough food in my backpack to walk 200 miles and not go low and pass out, right? Like, there is still some residual fear surrounding these events. And that's why I continue to push myself, not just to defeat fear, but also to show myself that I am stronger than the limitations that I've imposed upon myself through this diagnosis of diabetes and the events that I've been through, right? I mean, think about it like this. If we don't push our own limits through our own fears, we will never know how strong we truly are. Like, this is what fitness is. You put yourself through a challenge, you break down your muscle tissue, and then the next day it grows back stronger. That's the same way that our brain functions. I push through fear, my brain goes, okay, we didn't die. And I get stronger, I get braver, more courageous, right? All the way till now, where if you've been following the journey, I have a triathlon sprint in 3 weeks that I'm competing in. What? The guy who was nervous to walk outside of his house because he was scared of low blood sugars is now competing in a triathlon sprint. Same guy, same disease, still very present. We push through one more, one more, one more until we get to a place where we are confident in our abilities. And with this, you know, we talk about fear of insulin, fear of bolus, fear of lows. There's a lot of fears surrounding diabetes. And I'm not telling you just to go all wacky and, throw caution to the wind. So I'm going to dose five times as much as I typically do because, you know, screw fear. That's not the way to do it. It's through careful and calculated baby steps forward. Right. And this is actually what yielded the 80-20 blood sugar formula originally. Like, this is where it came from. It came from a place where I was like, well, shoot, I would like to not experience a near-death type 1 related incident ever again if I can avoid it. I'd like to have certainty in my blood sugars. I'd like to be able to predict where they're going to go so that I don't have to worry about the what ifs of blood sugar management quite as often, right? And through that, you know, I spent the next 2 years following that iterative process of one more, one more. What's it look like if I eat pizza? What's it look like if I go for a run? What's it look like if I stay up all night, right? And taking meticulous, detailed notes of the entire process, following that up with cross-referencing research articles and medical journals, and ultimately gaining a few more certifications within, training and nutrition and all that kind of stuff. That's why the 80-20 blood sugar formula exists. Initially, it was for me. It was so that I could have my peace of mind back. Like, that was the goal. I was like, I want my life back. I want to be able to go exercise, whether it's walking around the mall or training for a triathlon sprint. And I want to be able to do so with controlled blood sugars that enable me to be more present with family and friends and creation of memories, instead of hyper-focused on, well, what's my CGM say? Right? That's where it came from, and that's why it works so well. So I guess that kind of turned into a different lesson, giving you guys some backstory on why the 80-20 blood sugar formula exists in the first place. I actually discovered it through that process. It doesn't exist anywhere else. Like, this is through 2 years of experimentation and research, trial and error. Now, I know not everybody either cares to get help with diabetes, they're a do-it-yourself kind of person, or people just don't have the time or money or, I don't know, drive, because it's hard work, to come work with us to get it done. So if you're like, Matt, just tell us the process. The process is iterative experimentation with excessive documentation. That's it. Essentially, try stuff. If it works, take notes. If it didn't work, take notes and figure out why it didn't work, and then try again. That's what I did. That was the whole thing. Now, it took 2 years. Every single day, I tried just about every diet out there to compare and analyze, tried all the different workouts, right? And now I'm trying to push myself even further with this triathlon sprint, which is nuts. I can't even imagine where I'll take this next. I've got plans for continuing this, but that's the process. Diabetes is one giant science experiment of us gathering information, analyzing it, and adapting our strategies in order to stabilize blood sugars through different processes, right? And some people are totally fine living the same life every single day. And for a while, I did that as well. But I got sick of it. I realized this is not what I want out of life. I don't want to have the same day forever. I'd like to avoid Groundhog Day and actually enjoy it and make memories and have fun. So if you're on that same path as me, this is a big part of it, is facing our fears one baby step at a time, creating these trial and error experiments, and then taking really good notes so you can analyze and begin to put the pieces together, right? And if you are somebody who wants help putting the pieces together, obviously we have a whole program that I work with people on. You can go to diabetesinaction.com. There's a whole training there. That kind of walks through actually the exact story that I just gave you on a deeper level, what I learned, why I learned it. It talks about how I almost died in Paris, and it was the whole detailed experience there. It was wild. Grateful I made it through. It was a terrifying experience, to be truthful. But this is what's necessary for us to thrive with type 1 diabetes. No one else is going to do it for us. We can't wait for our doctors. We can't wait for medical technology to accelerate so quickly that it fixes everything. Because the reality is there are still many gaps, even with the algorithms in insulin pumps these days. It's not where it needs to be for us to be hands-off. We still need to know what we're doing. And if you expect to be able to predict stable blood sugars and get to what I've been able to accomplish, where, you know, now for the last 3 or 4 years, I think it's been 90 to 95% time in range consistently. Every single week I get the reports. If you want that, you're going to have to put the efforts in. And it's super uncomfortable facing your fears. Incredibly uncomfortable, right? And scary. Like, I'm just going to be completely real with you. You have to be ready for that. Because if you have a fear of lows, to then face the fear is not going to be like, oh yeah, check mark, I did it. It's going to be like, man, this is so uncomfortable, right? But if you have somebody guiding you along that process, showing you how to avoid the pitfalls, of course, it's a lot less scary. I have some clients who I've been able to walk through a few of these fears as well, because I've experienced them myself. So if you're somebody who's nervous at all, or even just frustrated with the fluctuations of blood sugars up and down and surrounding exercise, especially, this is something we've been iterating on with a lot of my clients, talking about burn rates and activity impact ratios. How do you predict where blood sugar is going to fall in the graph based on the intensity and duration of the activities, all that kind of stuff? Just go to diabetesinaction.com. You'll find a big training there that's really helpful for a lot of people. But what I want you to also walk away from with today's episode is that our fears, while they are built with good intention from our brain, you know, keep us alive, keep us safe, oftentimes they are overreactions, and we let it grow when we do nothing about them. When we live in fear, that fear gets cemented into our mind. Well, the last time that I traveled, I went low, so I can't travel anymore. And the longer I believe that, the harder it is to break that belief. So do with that what you will. I know not everyone experiences fear to the same degree as I did, and some people have it worse, but I want you to understand that fear does not have to be the reason you don't do things. But it starts with being honest with yourself. And that's what I had to attack first, realizing that if I stayed in my house for the rest of my life, I was going to be miserable. And eventually it got to a place where I was leaving the house, but I was still saying no to fun foods, right? Oh, I can't have pasta. That's going to destroy my blood sugars. Became, why not? Or how can I have pasta, right? So this is what I want you just to leave with today, is to start questioning these fearful thoughts and ask yourself, how can I take a baby step? How can I introduce one more to start breaking down these fears, breaking down these mental barriers that might be holding you back? All right. Now, if that was helpful, do subscribe. Obviously, these go up every week. My intent is to help you break barriers, break restrictions, and ultimately thrive with type 1 diabetes like myself. I'm not perfect, by the way. Never will be perfect. I still have bad days where blood sugars are a little wonky, right? Or fear does creep back up. I'm not perfect, but I hope this has been helpful for you. If you enjoyed it, be sure to hit the subscribe button, share this with somebody who needs to hear this message, and drop a comment. Let me know what in the past has been a fear of yours, and or what you're currently trying to break through. I would love to see your comments if you're on YouTube with me. And I'll catch you guys in the next episode. So drop that comment. Be sure to subscribe. I'll catch you next week. Let's break some fears down and keep up the fight.